All right, welcome in. Cube Show Podcast, a college football podcast, comes to you on Sundays because we usually like to try to give you a little bit more college football content on a day that not a lot of people focus on it. Of course, March Madness is in full swing, and I want to start out by apologizing to everybody for the complete embarrassment that my bracket pick was. I will show you my final four that I selected. Now, full disclosure, trying to have a little fun here. I'm going to go ahead and be a homer. I did this for the SEC Network. I did think Auburn could make a hell of a run. I did really like McNeese to be able to make a run. I mean, a team with 30 wins defends as well as anybody. I think they have like seven guys with 10 or more steals on the season, one with 95 steals, one of the leaders in the nation. They got a big that can be a problem. They can shoot threes. They didn't do that against Gonzaga, and that was a problem. So they were out. Kentucky flopped, didn't defend again. They were out. So, yeah, that's about as bad as it gets, folks. And I just wanted to apologize to the masses for even attempting to fill a bracket out this year. I will try and bounce back next year, and it probably won't take much because I don't think I could try to have gotten three of my four Final Four teams out before the first round was over. Yikes. On to college football. As you guys know, each and every week we're brought to you by Wickles Pickles. Wickedly delicious. We love Wickles. We keep them in the house. We've always got them here. Go grab a jar in your grocery store today. Tell them you heard about them right here on Cube Show. If your grocery store doesn't have them, tell them to grab them. If you got a place that serves them, like maybe Soho Social or Standard, downtown Homewood, tell them you want those items that come with them. And you can just snack on them. Make them go. Kids love them. We love them. Wickles.com. Use promo code CUBE. Save 15% of your first order. If you don't have them where you are, they'll drop ship them to you. It is that easy. We love Wickles. Thank you for sponsoring the show. All right. A couple of things we want to get to. I was at Alabama Pro Day. Don't really want to talk about the guys leaving. They're going pro. But being able to talk to some people on the staff and how different it was. I want to just kind of have a discussion about that. The Caden Proctor situation, we're going to talk about that. Obviously, that also involves Alabama, as well as Seth McLaughlin and Jalen Milroe. The snap situation, quarterback center exchange. We're just going to have a conversation about being a quarterback and being a center, what that means, what that entails, how it works. And I have some fairly intimate knowledge on the entire situation that I'll share. And some of it I'll just leave open to interpretation for you. We're going to give you our Vanderbilt spring preview today, kind of talk about that just a little bit. And also a question that I think needs to be answered across college football. Culture or playbook? Is that where we're heading? And do you have to make that decision? We'll talk about it a little bit more later in the show. Appreciate you being with us. Please subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. We're approaching 10,000. It's been the goal for a while. Kind of struggling to get there now, but some of you have stuck with us here in the offseason. We appreciate that. If you haven't and you're new, what we do in the fall, and we'll do it for spring games when they come around from SEC teams, we dive into the film each and every week. We tell you what we saw, every team, every film, and we give you our analysis usually the next day. With two more teams being added next year, it's going to be tough. It's probably going to end up being a lot of Mondays. But either way, we appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much. Let's just start with the Caden Proctor situation, because there are a lot of people that are angry at this and mad at this. Caden Proctor committed to Iowa, decommitted, commits to Alabama, enrolls in Alabama, plays as a freshman, had a decent year. He got thrust in. I don't think he was ready to play. I physically don't think he was ready to play. I don't think his weight was exactly where it needed to be for him to be able to go play. And talking to Amy Bragg, who was the former nutritionist for Alabama, who's not there anymore, not recently, but last year before the season and during the season, they had to work hard to get him to 360 to be able to play. That's a tough place to live at tackle, just to be honest with you, because there's a lot of quickness that's involved there, especially in this league against some of the edge defenders that you're going to see. Did he do some good things at times? Sure. Does he have a lot of ability? Absolutely. But he had some rough spots along the way. So then he hits the portal as soon as Nick Saban retires, and he commits to Iowa. He's at a basketball game. He talks about how guys kept in touch with him and how they rooted him on when he was struggling in the SEC, whatever it was. There are a lot of people that accused tampering at that point. I don't necessarily believe that that in and of itself was tampering. Could there have been? Maybe. I don't know. I think there's tampering all over the place. So if you think your school's not doing it, you're a fool. But then he's at Iowa. And then all of a sudden, the report's coming out the day that Iowa starts spring practice that Caden Proctor's going to hit the transfer portal again. He posts some Michael Jordan, I'm back thing on his Instagram story, and apparently is going to come back to Alabama. So there are a lot of things that come with this. Now, people think that he stole money from the Iowa collective, that, you know, he's robbing people of his NIL money. Did he get a little bit based on what I'm told? Yes, but there wasn't a large sum that was utilized to be able to get him there. And then he just up and decided to go. You know, the first thing that I would be concerned about is you got a guy that maybe is going to come back and was out of shape and a little bit too heavy to begin with. You have trouble getting him in shape, in good enough shape to be able to be successful at tackle for the year. And now he's moved from Tuscaloosa to Iowa. He's gone on spring break, where apparently that's where he was convinced by some of his teammates to come back to Alabama. Now he's going to move back to Tuscaloosa after spring break, and he's not going to get any spring ball in at Iowa or Alabama. That would be my biggest concern, because now if you talk about getting him back in school, say for the summer, you're going to have to spend most of the summer trying to get in shape. Then you go into fall camp, and there hasn't been a lot of strength conditioning. There hasn't been a lot of just becoming more explosive, being a better overall player, more flexible. A lot of it has been the focus primarily on getting your weight down. That could be a problem. So, and also, like I said, he had some struggles last year. There's no guarantee he's going to come in and be an elite tackle in the SEC right away, because he wasn't that last year. Potential? Yeah, sure. But for the folks who are mad about this, either way, do I like it? Absolutely not. I hate it. There's parts of it that just disgust me. My first question when I saw it was, what are the kids on the team saying about that? Like, dude, you bailed on us. You left. Most of the guys I played with wouldn't want you back. And I've heard a couple of guys do. I've heard that a couple of guys down there don't. And I can probably guarantee that the other guys that were competing for a tackle spot during spring aren't real excited to hear that he's going to come back and compete. Now, you got to go be the best player, and you got to go compete, be a better player, and be a better tackle, go win the job. Sure, all that's real. But think of a guy that already bailed on you and might come back and be able to beat you out just because of his talent. That's tough, man. Nobody's going to like that. And you don't have to like everything that happens as a college football player on your team, but that's a spot that could be a little bit uncomfortable. So in the end, this is what we created. This is what we have allowed. And we can be mad about it, and we can point fingers at it, and we can talk collectives and money and leaving in one way or the other and loyalty and all of that. But at the end of the day, we're allowing it. And we've opened the door, and every door that is opened or even slightly cracked for today's college football player, they're going to take advantage of it, and they're going to even find other ways to circumvent some of the rules to get those doors cracked open. I don't blame them. I'm not mad at them. Once again, I'm not going to say that I like it. I'm not going to say that technically I agree with it. But the reality is, this is what the rules allow, and this is where we are. Same thing with NIL, whether you want to call it pay for play, whether you want to talk actual NIL. Like this kid from Oakland that's launching all these threes in the tournament. Like, he gets an insurance deal, and you see him talking about that. Like, that's NIL, okay? That's what it was meant to be. There's a lot of it that's not right now. And does that bring tampering? Does that cause a lot of the problems and a lot of the issues? Of course it does. Yes. But either way, if you like the fact that he's coming back and you were mad about him potentially being tampered to go there initially, you're saying that there was absolutely no tampering to potentially bring him back. If you were assuming it before, you're not going to assume it now. I feel like that's probably just a little bit weird. But this is the animal that we have created in today's college football. None of us love it. None of us think it's good for the game. None of us think it's good for locker rooms. It's definitely not good for rosters. It's definitely not good for coaches. But it is what we've created and we've allowed. And so I think you're going to see more of this. I think you're going to see more guys change their mind, flip-flop back and forth. I'm waiting for a kid that tries to leave in the middle of a season and go play somewhere else. Somebody's going to try it and attempt it. It might not be in football, but it's going to be in another sport. So be mad all you want, but the reality is, the NCAA opened these doors and is terrified of any litigation moving forward, so they've allowed these things to happen. And the courts have assisted in some of that happening as well. Alabama Pro Day. It was pretty cool to be down there. You think about the fact that I was doing this for the SEC Network, and we're talking about Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold and Justin Aboigbe and J.C. Latham. I got a chance to interview Kalen DeBoer. I got a chance to interview Kane Womack. I got a chance to interview the current starting quarterback, the current offensive coordinator, and a current DB on the team. I mean, it's just wild to think about. That's how different things are right now. That probably hadn't taken place in every other pro day combined under Nick Saban at Alabama. And whether you hear about the music at practice, whether you hear about the way things are happening as far as conversations in the hallways, I can tell you this, and this is, I'm not saying that this is good, bad, or indifferent. The vibe is different inside that building. And I think part of that is going to be a positive. I think part of it moving into where today's college football is can assist in keeping guys happier, can make guys want to go play harder. Because with the way that Nick Saban coached and the way that Nick Saban ran his building, we are getting fewer and fewer college football players that are wired that way, that want to be programmed that way. Maybe you're close to it, like they got a couple circuits loose, and they just want someone to say, just get me wired to where I can think like that guy did, and I can go play ball to the best of my ability. They want that training and coaching. They want to be reprogrammed that way. There's not a lot of dudes like that today, man. There's just not a lot of guys like that anymore. There's damn sure not anywhere near as many guys like that as there were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So I think the fact that Kalen DeBoer has come in and it's been a little bit more of a laid back approach. Now, I'm not saying that the will to win is any less. I'm not saying that the work required is fewer or not as intense. I'm not saying that the practices are going to be easier. I'm just telling you that the vibe in the building is a little bit more laid back. It's a little bit more friendly, so to speak. I think some of the recruiting strategies are a little bit different, and you're seeing it begin to work in their favor a little bit more. Now, are they going to dominate the recruiting landscape the way that Nick Saban and his staffs did for 10 years plus? Probably not. But do you have to be that dominant if you come in and coach guys up in a little bit of a different way? You're still going to have the ability to go out and win some games. So I thought it was cool to be able to talk to Nick Sheridan, the offensive coordinator, about his vision with Jalen Milroe and how they're going to build things around their players. It's one thing Kalen has always done, whether it's been Jake Haner, but there's been Ronnie Rivers, whoever it's been, Michael Penix, when Dylan Johnson got healthy, you've seen, and I'm not talking year to year, I'm talking inside of a season, offenses have molded and moved in different ways. And hearing him, Kalen DeBoer, and Nick Sheridan talk about it, and then I talked to Jalen Milroe and his comfort level with it, where they're going, and hearing Kane Womack talk about an aggressive install that they've already had through maybe a quarter of spring practice, you have to feel pretty good about where things are headed. We're going to preview Alabama later in the spring. Offensive line is going to be a big topic of conversation there. Wide receiver is going to be a big topic of conversation there. And I'll just say this based on some folks I talked to down there. I think quarterback will become maybe a little bit bigger topic of conversation. Definitely the battle for number two. But I think Jalen Milroe is one now. But I'm not going to 100% Katie bar the door in saying that he is guaranteed to be the guy for the entire season coming up, no matter what. There's things could happen. And I think having a little bit of a different vibe is going to take that program a little bit of a different direction. You know, talking to Kane Womack, seeing Maurice Lindquist down on the field and seeing how they talk to their guys and seeing just kind of the attitude and the demeanor. You still got David Blue in there running the strength program. They're going to do things in a very similar way. I'm confident in what he does. He's already done a great job. So just being around it and seeing it, I wanted to share that it does feel like the vibe is a little bit different. And I don't think that's a negative thing. I don't think that it means it's going to be better than Nick Saban. I don't think it means that Nick Saban's way was wrong. It's just that I do think there's some inherent advantages with how it's going now, with how college football is headed, with where college football players today are going and where their brains are and how they're wired. It could just be something that allows them to have more success than some people maybe believe Kalen DeBoer will have in Tuscaloosa. So talking to Jalen Milroe, and none of this comes from him because I didn't directly ask him about it. I didn't think it was fair to ask him about this situation right then, right there. But did have some conversations with some people there, have had some conversations with some people that were around the program last year. This whole snap thing was Seth McLaughlin. I played center at Auburn, 96 to 2000. We ran some gun. And we ran silent count where it would be on football movement. We ran some where it would be verbalized. Quarterback would say go, and I would snap the football. I used to look down, and the quarterback would lift his leg up, and that would be our indicator. There were other times where either a guard could look back, and we would do things in a different way. We can do it that way. Were there times that I look back, and the quarterback lifted his leg and then tried to change something? I didn't hear him, and we had a bad snap? Yeah, absolutely. Were there times that the snap was just off target? 100% yes. But I'm just going to try to take you inside how this should operate. Now, I never went on the clap. And I've explained to you guys before, Lane Kiffin told me a long time ago, the reason that they clap is that the audible that you can clap is louder than anything that you can verbalize. So that's why they go on that. It does come with some complications, though. And it is a little bit different, I believe, than some people think. So here are a couple of things that I know and a couple of things I've been told and how I feel like this thing went. First off, if you didn't hear Ryan Day address this in a press conference, he was asked how Seth McLaughlin is being handled in Ohio State. He said they've had no snap issues. And then he went on to say that, you know, I think some of the issues that were happening in Alabama were based on the cadence. Now, just right there, end all be all, I think it's a little bit bullshit because it's over, it's done, it's in the past. Like, why do we need to pat our guy on the rear end for something that happened a year ago? Just say he's handled things here great, and that's it, and move on. Now, Kalen DeBoer was also asked about Ryan Day's comments, and he doubled down and said, you know, we've had no issues with Jalen and the cadence here. So that's been all good. We are fine. We are good to go. So that's another thing right there where Kalen DeBoer does his job. Ryan Day's doing his job. Folks, we are entering the era of more he said, she said in college football than we've ever had before, ever in the history of this game. Because now you have players that are leaving one place and going to another place. And it's not just their exact experiences, it's their feelings that are going to be shared in different places. And when emotions come involved, things get exaggerated. And when emotions become involved, anger a lot of times is something that ensues and that can drive you to discuss things in a little bit of a different way. You guys all know text messages with your wife, with your friends, with your girlfriends. What do we do when we read those text messages? We put our interpretation on it. So when a guy that played one place goes to another place and tells a coach, this is how it happened, and it doesn't come out real positive, that coach is going to put another interpretation on it of, that guy must have been a bum. That guy was screwing up all the time. That guy doesn't know what the hell he was doing. This he said, she said is going to be as inflammatory as it has ever been. Guys going to their new schools are going to want to impress their coaches. And if they don't know anybody on that other staff and kid A comes in and says, this is how that went, the coach doesn't have anything else to go on. So he's going to believe him. He also might want that player to be a good player on his team. So he's immediately going to defend him. So you can see where this back and forth is going to get really complicated. Now, a lot of these coaches do know each other and a lot of guys know guys on other staffs and they'll be able to quickly figure it out. But if it's players that they need and want to be able to come in and succeed, then they're probably going to go out of their way to try to help them. Some of it may be legitimate information. And I do think some of what Seth McLaughlin has told Ryan Day is legitimate information. So let me break down to you exactly how this can go, where it can go wrong, and then you can interpret however you want to as to what and why was happening with this entire situation last year, and then hopefully we can move on from it. First off, Seth McLaughlin didn't have a lot of bad snaps with Bryce Young at quarterback. Played pretty good football when he was asked to come in the previous year. Comes in with Jalen Milroe, hadn't had a ton of starts under his belt, and apparently there's some issues there. Snapping a football is similar to a golf swing. It's repetition. Your body learns to do it. It was something that I would go out in the summer with Ben Leard, and we would get hundreds of snaps a day. Zone to the right, zone to the left, counter right, counter left, straight drop back, gun, 50, 75, 100 snaps. And you get your steps. The quarterback understands how to ride the center a certain way when he's underneath. He knows that if we're running outside zone to the left out of gun, that ball is going to probably track a little bit to the right. He may even step a little bit to the right pre-snap before that ball is snapped. It's one thing that I've heard Jalen being accused of as well is misalignment in different places. And I went back and watched 5 games from last year. And are there times that maybe he aligns a little bit further off the center's left foot? Yes. But I haven't seen him line up over a guard or anything ridiculous like that. I mean, that's something that I feel like I would have seen, and probably most people calling that game would have seen if it led to a bad snap. Because usually when you get a bad snap, it's going to be replayed and people are going to look at it. And most times people are just going to say it's on the center. So I haven't seen that egregious of alignment issues from Jalen when I've gone back and watched it. All right, so when you go on the clap, there's usually an indicator as well. Sometimes it can be 2 claps. So the first clap is the indicator. The second clap is the snap. Sometimes it could be go or ready or set or blue or angel, whatever it is. You're going to give an indicator that you're getting ready to clap. Now, the 2 claps, I would think most of the times will be if it's going to be in a really loud environment. Again, you can't verbalize things as loud as you can clap, so they won't hear it. And then obviously you clap to get everybody ready. And then the next clap, you're going to snap. So going back to that golf swing analogy, muscle memory on a snap, if you don't get the indicator and you get the clap, you can imagine that all of a sudden there's going to be a little hitch there. There's going to be a little extra giddy up. You know, there's going to be a little more intensity, like, oh shit, you got to get that snap up. I can see where one would go awry there. I've been rushed a few times. I've seen that. I've seen the play clock going down, and all of a sudden, quarterback's trying to get the protection done. I'm trying to make some calls, and oh shoot, go. You just got to do it. Either way, whether there was no indicator, whether the clap came too early, whether there was two claps, there should have been one. At the end of the day, it is on the center to have an accurate snap. Nothing else matters. It does not matter. There are ways to force it or increase the chances of it to be inaccurate or to be errant. One, absolutely, 100%. I won't argue with that. I won't disagree with that. Snap's got to be there. Protection's got to be there. Calls are got to be there. That was my job when I was a center. We sat there in film room. If somebody didn't hear a call the next day, that was on me. Even if I knew I called it and the two guards are sitting there next to me saying, hey, you called that, I heard it. Didn't matter. It's my job. I get the calls to everyone. I make sure the protection is what it needs to be. I make sure the snap is accurate. Nothing else matters. That has to happen first and foremost. I understand that there are complications, but folks, that's football. That's just the way that it's got to go. Now, from a quarterback's perspective, you got to get your ducks in a row. You're the leader of the football team. You're the field general of that offense. So you got to have things buttoned up. And if you're not giving an indicator, and if you're clapping and expecting the football, and then you're getting on your center's ass because, hey, I clapped and you didn't. So I thought we're going on two claps, or where was my indicator? Like, the thing that maybe frustrates me about this tire situation the most is those two need to go get it figured out. It wasn't on Tommy Rees. It wasn't on Nick Saban. Those two needed to go get it figured out. And they didn't, because it continued through the majority of the season. So I think there's mutual blame here. Which side gets the most blame? I wasn't there. So I'm not going to directly point that finger. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think it was 100% on Seth McLaughlin. And I'm not going to sit here and point my finger and tell you it was 100% on Jalen Milroe. But I will tell you this. Both have got to get some things cleaned up. Because whether it's rushed, whether it's not, you don't think Seth McLaughlin is going to play in some intense stadiums and places and environments? You got to get the snaps accurate. And he can do it. He's a good football player. Jalen Milroe's got to get everything pre-snap buttoned up. Like, that's got to happen for him. Those things cannot be inconsistent. You can't get later in the year and all of a sudden thinking that you can do different things at the line of scrimmage and get all creative and all of a sudden become this offensive wizard when that hasn't been the case the entire season. So I think both have a few things to clean up as we go into the season. I think Seth's got to get his snaps consistent no matter what. And I think Jalen, mentally and emotionally, has got to find a way to mature a little bit more if he's going to take his game to the next level. That's just how I see this entire situation. And I think now maybe we can put it to rest and we can kind of move on. ESPN's got a new college football deal with the college football playoff. I'm excited about this. I know a lot of folks are saying they don't want it all on one network. I get that. I understand it. I do think that if you see like some of the divide and back and forth, there could be some positives moving forward. Selfishly, I would love to work a college football playoff game one day. That's a goal of mine. I feel like that might be a little bit more realistic now. So I'm excited about potentially, maybe, possibly having that opportunity one day. But I think it's great for the college football playoff because now how you align things, how you schedule things, and where things are on certain networks is going to be a lot easier to manage. Don't think that this is all 100% always going to land on ESPN networks, though. There is the ability to sell one or two of these games for them to air somewhere else. So that can always be a possibility down the road as well. So keep that in mind. Also, keep Blakely's Bouquets in mind if you want. Easter and spring is here. Call 205-579-4900. If you're in the Birmingham metro area and you need flowers for Easter, you need our flowers anytime around the spring. If you have anything pop up that you might need those for, I've used Blakely's multiple times. They are exceptional. They do great work, great people as well. Get your Mother's Day orders in now. Go ahead and get it taken care of, and you won't have to worry about it, and you don't have to rush, and you don't have to panic. They've also got a subscription service that's coming soon, so you can check them out on Twitter, Instagram. Just go search Blakely's Bouquets. They do beautiful work, fantastic people. Blakely'sBouquets.com. You can get your orders in there or call 205-579-4900. So we've talked center quarterback exchange. We've talked transfers. We've talked Alabama Pro Day, kind of what's different inside of that environment. And one of the things that I've kind of noticed with Alabama and what was a little bit different is the culture seems to have changed a little bit. And it's not that it's less regimented. It's just regimented in a little bit of a different way. It seems to adhere to today's college athletes just a little bit more. And before we go into Vanderbilt, it kind of got me thinking about, is this where we're headed? Do we have to make a decision here? How important is culture moving forward? You think about a guy like Billy Napier. It's one of the things that I love about him. He's a big culture guy, and he wants everything inside that facility to be built on that culture. Everybody's got to be on the same page. We've got to be pulling in the same direction. We've heard Brian Kelly talking about alignment, right? We got to have NIL. We got to have the fan base. We got to have all the players, all the coaches, all pulling in the same direction. And I'm not saying that you can get away without having that. But I do wonder if a lot of the folks that have kind of built what they have been successful with in the past on culture and everybody being on the same page and sort of developing the mindset and the personality and the attitude to all be the same. And that's what's going to sort of pull us forward. Is that as important anymore? Should it lean more towards X's and O's per se? Because if you're going to have guys that are in and out of your program, if you're going to get a graduate player who comes in and has 1 year that can help you, how much does the culture matter? And I'm not saying that a negative culture or a bad culture or guys that are just running rampant doing whatever the hell they want can be a positive. But my point in this is that if you put a ton of equity into building culture and some of it forces you to subtract a little bit of football, X's and O's, alignment, assignment, audibles, checks, realizing, seeing different things, understanding situational football. Is that something that, are you getting a return on that investment with that equity that's put in? I think it's a really interesting question moving forward, because you look at a team like Ole Miss, who we all think is going to be in the playoff and make a deep run in the playoffs this year. I don't think Lane pushes hard and goes out of his way to try to develop some mythical culture or magical culture. He's got a system and a scheme that works, and he wants talent to be able to put in it, and he expects you to show up and do what you're supposed to do, and then you go make plays. It's the reality of it. You look at Clemson. They haven't been able to stay on the plateau that they were on for a while, and a lot of what Dabo built was around, you know, sort of that culture, you know, family, little old Clemson, us against the world. Now, they had some hella talented dudes for a while that were helping them do it, but that was where a lot of the equity continued to go. A lot of the effort continued to go there. A lot of the investment in the program still went there. And I'm not talking about investment necessarily from a financial perspective, but whether it's, you know, team meetings, leadership meetings, you know, different councils on your team, you know, hearing different people come and speak, is that going to be important moving forward? Or if you're getting a player in from another program, maybe they came from a great culture. Maybe they came from a better culture. Maybe they came from a bad culture. Are you going to be able to mold that in 1 year, 2 years? You know, and then the guys that you have in your program that you may need to help you on the field that are going to leave after a year or two, would it have been more beneficial to avoid some of the culture discussions or some of the attitude discussions or leadership discussions and just primarily put some of that on football? Because then maybe they get in there and they help you a little bit more in that spot right then, right there. I'm not saying either way is right or wrong. I'm saying that it does feel like we're heading down a path now where a lot of the folks that we have heard going back to Butch Jones at Tennessee with the slogans and the statements and the we're this and that and we do it this way and that and we're going to sit and talk and all these guys are going to get in front of everybody. I don't think it's ever going to go away to an extent. But I'm just wondering that moving forward, maybe on the investment scale, you know, are we beginning to maybe slide a little bit more of our investments over to the X's and O's and the football and the understanding and the film and how to line up and the technical fundamental portion of what we're going to do on Saturdays? Because if we're going to a more mercenary style anyway, it feels like that's the investment that would probably pay off for you at least more quickly. Because if you're going to get a guy in for a year, or if a guy's only going to stay with you for a year or two, you need him on the field on Saturdays to help as soon as possible. And I think that there's a little bit of that in Vanderbilt as we roll into, you know, sort of their spring preview. I think this reset that Clark Lea has put into place points in the direction of that. That's my opinion. Clark Lea going to be back on the field handling a lot more of the defense, probably where he should be. It's where he cut his teeth. It's what he's best at. And one of the things, I mean, full disclosure, one of the things that I love about Clark Lea when you sit down and talk to him the last couple of years are some of the things that he talks about how he wants to develop men, how he wants to develop human beings and put them out into the world to be better people. And like Jordan Rogers and I had one of their games, and we sat on the phone for 30 minutes after we met with Clark and being like, how cool is it him talking about this and talking about that? And like, our tribe does this and that, and this is how we help one another. I love some. I wrote a bunch of the sayings down. I've got a book of coaching quotes that I keep for my kids one day that I write down. I'm just going to give that to them one day. And like, I mean, he had like five or six things that I wrote down in there just from the one conversation. I loved that part of it. But now I wonder if that development portion, and you look at the players that they've lost. I mean, Anthony Steen goes to Alabama and starts. Ray Davis goes to Kentucky and is super successful. You can't keep losing these guys like this. Now you've got Justin Ball is out. Will Shepard's going to Colorado. DeRicky Wright's going to Texas A&M. Nate Clifton, defensive lineman, is going to USC. Walter Taylor's going to Colorado. AJ Swan's going to LSU. Savion Riley's out. London Humphreys is going to Georgia. Jaden McGowan's going to Boston College. I mean, on and on and on and on and on. You can't keep helping these other programs with that amount of equity put into the leadership portion, the personality portion, the attitude portion, the culture, if you will, and then just handing it away to these other programs. And it has to become easier for guys who are coming in to be on the same page. And I feel like Clark is heading that direction a little bit. I love the hire of Tim Beck as offensive coordinator. Auburn fans, you saw exactly what he's capable of with New Mexico State last year, as well as Diego Pavia, one of the guys we're going to talk about in a second. I think it is a very simple offense to play in, but is a very difficult offense to defend. It is the ultimate, we are going to take what you give us offense. And it requires a little bit of quarterback run, some by design, some by option, sometimes just because it happens to be there. But it's an offense that is going to spread you out. It can be physical downhill. It's going to take advantage of things out in the flat when you don't cover it. It can attack you down the field. It can work the middle of the field. It can literally hit you anywhere and everywhere. But it's not necessarily – it's not a high-risk offense. It's the level of difficulty with a lot of the things that are asked, specifically from the quarterback and skill players, are not where they are in some other offenses. A lot of the movement and a lot of the alignment, the formations force you to be in conflict in different ways. And whichever one you pick, they're just going to take the other one and go that direction. If it's a 17-play drive, fine. If it's a one-play drive, cool. I love the offense, and I like what he does with it. And I like bringing in Jerry Kill, who I think is awesome if you've ever had a chance to be around him. So now Clark Lee knows he's going to step away from that head coaching portion of it a little bit. So he brings another head coach on staff with him that also knows that offense. I love the fact that Clark Lee can step back a little bit and say, I'd like to have another head coach on staff that can maybe say, hey, man, we did it this way or we did it that way. I appreciate that. And I'm anxious to see what Clark can do with the defense. One other thing, though, that I think is going to be big for Vanderbilt is Robert Steiner coming in as a strength coach. This is a team that's been pushed around for a long time. This is a team that has looked gassed late in the season, even before Clark Lee was there. And even though depth is still a bit of a concern for Vanderbilt right now, I think Robert Steiner coming in, he's been at Notre Dame, he's been a couple stops in the SEC, UCF, I think he can help with that. Go a little bit of a different direction with performance as opposed to just strength. And I think there'll be more of an emphasis on that. So offensively, Diego Pavia comes in for New Mexico State. This kid is a freaking bulldog. 2,973 yards passing, 26 touchdowns, 9 picks, 923 yards rushing, 7 touchdowns. You saw him in the bowl game 2 years ago. You saw him go down and beat Auburn in Jordan-Hare Stadium. 2-time wrestling state champion. He's as tough as they come, as physical as they come. Like, he is the ultimate, I want that guy on my team. I despise that guy if he's not on my team. Now, there's a lot you got to wrangle in with him. The game that I had against UTEP, I think they're up 21 points in the fourth quarter, and he's throwing go balls. Like, can't have that. Not something that can be real. You can't go pee on your opponent's logo and film it and post it on social media on their practice field, like on your rival's logo. Like, that kind of stuff's got to go away. I think having Tim Beck, having Jerry Kill going to help with that a lot. So is it a little bit of a risk to bring him in from a personality perspective? Yes. But you bring in other people around him that I think can help manage that and corral it. If they can get this dude on the field just playing football, he can win you games. And is he super consistent? No. Is he the most accurate? No. But God almighty, he's a competitor. And he's a guy that you want on your team. Nate Johnson comes in from Utah. A little bit more wiggle than, say, a Mike Wright had when he was at quarterback. A guy that can help you with his legs. 499 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, no picks. 235 on the ground, 4 touchdowns, and very limited action. But we've seen him in some big level competition do some good things. Blaise Berlovitz also comes in for New Mexico State at quarterback, so he knows the system, knows the scheme. So I saw some of those quarterbacks that were out. Now we got new quarterbacks that are in. They know the system. And you got some competitors, highly competitive guys, are going to be able to come in and potentially help with that offense. Cedric Alexander at running back. 371, 4 touchdowns last year. I think AJ Newberry can help you as well. I think you're fine at running back right now. If you're Vanderbilt, I think you're good. Wide receiver. Yeah. You lost some super talent. You'd love to have Will Shepard there. I mean, the ultimate 50-50 ball guy, but I think Junior Sherrill had a pretty good year, showed some signs. Quincy Skinner needs to get, you know, a little bit more consistent, but he's a guy that I think can help. The thing that I don't like are the tight ends that you lost, because that's a position you've been pretty good at for the last few years. You've continued to lose those, and I don't know if they have the same kind of guys there. Offensive line, am I concerned? Yes. Was it bad last year? Yes. Chris Klonakis comes in as your offensive line coach. He was at Nevada with Chris Ault. He was at Louisville when Lamar was there. He was at Liberty with Hugh Freeze. A lot of the Q run, a lot of the spread stuff, RPO game, like, he's been involved in a ton of that. Pistol, been involved with a ton of that. I think getting him in to give you a little bit of a different voice in how some things are designed is going to be really valuable for Vanderbilt. Once again, I think this spring is less about the actual players and more about the actual football, as far as what can they get installed, how can they install it around their guys, what can everybody adapt to, and going further with the actual X's and O's that potentially are going to be run this fall. Because I think now you bring in a scheme that is designed to out scheme on a regular basis. It's not there to rely on talent. And you got some guys that have run it before and know how to do it. And this is a group that's got to improve no matter what they run. And they could go hurry up. No, they could go triple option. It doesn't matter. The offensive line's got to get better. You do bring in Stephen LaSoya from Mississippi State. He's played some high level football. I think he can help. They give you a bigger, more physical body there that could potentially be somebody that helps push some folks around. You also get Jeremiah Dillon from Ole Miss, 6'1", 180. Kid who can run. Maybe he comes in and helps at wide receiver as well. So my focus is going to be on how these kids adapt to what they're putting in, more so than who shows out in the spring, if that makes sense. Again, kind of going from we're all on the same page, cultural portion of this, to the X's and O's, like how can we go out scheme people moving forward? Defensively, like I said, you've got your head coach is going to be a little bit more involved. Zaylen Wood comes in from Middle Tennessee. He had 10 sacks, an interception, and a touchdown reception over the last couple of years. I think he can help over there off the edge. He's a little bit more bigger, physical, heavy-handed body. Langston Patterson's back, had a ton of tackles last year. I mean, when you put Vanderbilt's film on, 10 was making plays on a regular basis, flying around. Having him inside this defense is going to be big at linebacker. You go get Keandre Snyder from Purdue, again, who's a bigger, more physical edge, 262 pounds. I think he's going to be able to help. 6.5 sacks in 2 years at Purdue, behind some pretty good pass rushers, by the way. So I think he's somebody who fits sort of where they want to go with this newer scheme, a little bit of a different scheme defensively. Corner is a spot I think they're greatly going to be upgraded. Want to get a little bit bigger there. So you go get Marlon Jones from Eastern Washington, 6'1", 188. You go get Colby Taylor from Wyoming, 6'3", 185. So now you have more length, a little bit bigger at corner, so you can handle some different things that this league's going to offer you. Your top three corners are back from last year. So now you have 5 capable corners if you're Vanderbilt that you're going to be able to roll out on the field, which could be a massive advantage when you're talking about some of the pressure things that they're going to want to try to do. Fontenable is going to be comes in from TCU at safety, a bigger body at 215 that I think is going to be able to help. CJ Taylor going to go back home to his more natural position. And I think that's the place where if you kind of look, he's a guy that is definitely going to be able to help this defense. So, I mean, I think when you look at Clark Lee having his hands on it, some of the bodies that have been brought in on the back end, some guys are going to be able to go play closer to where they're going to be more successful. I mean, the kid from TCU, I think, is going to be sort of more that overhang role. So that's going to be an area that maybe they haven't been as good at the last couple seasons. But I like the reset. If you're going to try to do it, and the fact that Clark Lee can take a step back and say, all right, we tried it this way. It's probably not going there as quickly as we need it to be. What's our other option? and then maybe taking that left turn and saying, all right, let's try to go do it this way. I like the guys that he's brought on staff. Maybe it goes a little bit away from, hey, we're Vanderbilt, we're smart, we need a certain kind of kid, to, guys, we got to go figure out ways to win games. And ultimately, at the very ground floor of all of these moves, I think that's where Clark Lea is going. I think he's getting away from, this is how Vanderbilt's always won, this is what it needs here, this is the personality type, to, what in the F do we have to do to win a couple football games? Get them in. It's a little bit more of a mercenary mentality, but I think it's one that has a little bit better chance to succeed where today's college football is. They got the new facility going in and everything too. So, yes, there's a lot of talent out. No, I don't think they're going to go win 10 games, but I do think there's some things to be positive about with this team. And you're talking about where they potentially are headed. I'll tell you something else to be positive about. It's game time. I actually used game time to get some standing room only tickets for the Auburn-Kentucky game in basketball earlier this year. I got them last minute and I got a heck of a deal. I didn't think that that was real. I didn't think you'd get those last minute deals, but you definitely can with game time. Go to gametime.co. Concerts, music, sports, comedy, theater events near you, whatever you need tickets for, game time can help. Flash deals, zone deals, last minute tickets, easy to find and buy tickets for every kind of event in your area. And you're going to get the views from your venue right there. You're going to be able to pull it up and see what it looks like from where you're going to sit. You see that view from your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what you're going to get. It's easy. You can buy tickets in seconds with just two taps right there on your app. So go to your app store and search Game Time. Download it on your phone. You know you've always got it loaded and ready to go. And I'll tell you this right now. You download that Game Time app, create an account, use promo code CUBE, C-U-B-E. You get $20 off your first purchase. It's that easy. $20 off your first purchase right there at Game Time. Sweet, man. I'm telling you, I've got it on my phone. I even sometimes just go look and see what it would cost to go to something if I might not even really want to go to it. So if I can get a good enough deal, I'll load the kids up and we'll go. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem that code CUBE. And you get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Get those last minute tickets and that low price guarantee. All right. So a little bit of a Vanderbilt spring preview. We got a lot of other teams coming up. We had a bunch of teams getting started this week. Kentucky got going this week. Vandy got going this week. South Carolina got going this week. Mississippi State got going this week. So we got all those still coming. We got a couple spring games coming up next weekend. We'll watch the film of those. We'll break those down. We'll get back to you with what we saw inside those spring games. And then we'll go different team previews each and every week moving forward for the rest of spring. Please go subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Give us that 5-star review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify as well. We're on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, at Cube Show. Tell your friends about us, please. We're going to bring you college football content every Sunday. And the last thing I need to tell you about is Blue Delta Jeans. The best pair of jeans you're ever going to buy. Premium denim right there for you. Customizable. Digitally, you can customize these jeans now. Go to BlueDeltaJeans.com and you'll see how. I wear them everywhere. My family and I are getting ready to go out of town for spring break. The only pants I'm taking with me are Blue Delta Jeans. That's it. That's all you need. You can dress them up, dress them down, casual, nice night out with a sport coat and a dress shirt. Blue Delta Jeans are there for you. Gift cards coming up for Mother's Day, whatever that is, a birthday coming up, you can do that at Blue Delta Jeans. Tell Nick and the guys you heard about them right here on Cube Show. We will be back next week with more college football content right here on Cube Show.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.